Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers. Hello and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read, the first man tried to turn, but he was too late. Adar jammed his blaster lengthwise into the man's back, while at the same time he brought his other hand around the front and slid his blade into the man's neck. In another situation, Adar might have hesitated to kill. But with the Hunwe turncoats hot on his tail below, and the man on the other side of the bed hollering as loud as he could, Adar did not have time to dither with the men. The burly man grabbed his neck as Adar kicked his feet out from underneath him and yanked him back from the bed. Adar heard a man's voice call out from the other side of the door. Again, he wasn't able to recognize the words, but he imagined that one of the turncoats was calling to the others. So much for doing this quietly. And now, Chapter 6. The woman rolled over towards the short man, tossed her head to move her blonde hair out of her face, and kicked her bound bare feet into his groin. He clutched at his crotch, screaming as he doubled over. She squirmed up into a sitting position. A bruise was starting to form on her cheek, and Adar had caught a glance of a bloody leg underneath her dress when she had made contact with the short man. She scowled and yelled something Adar did not understand. Adar stepped back from the bed and hoped that the woman didn't try to attack him as well. She might be afraid that he had saved her while planning to take her for himself. That sort of thing was known to happen, and any careful woman knew to expect it. Distance should discourage any fear she might have of that possibility. He turned to the door as it swung open. So much for hoping to have the situation resolved before the turncoats found me, Adar thought. As he pulled up his blaster and pointed it at the Hunwe turncoat in the doorway, the human eyes stared back at him through the visor of the Hunwe helmet. The turncoat's blaster was pointed at Adar. Adar pulled the trigger of his own blaster while dodging to the side. He should not have bothered. The Hunwe turncoat had been focusing on the woman with a hungry look in his eyes and now looked down in surprise when the blast tore through his abdomen. A scream escaped from the man's lips, and he grabbed at the spot where he had been hit, his gloved hand unable to cover the large hole that had formed there. It was the first noise that Adar had heard coming from a turncoat that sounded human. As the turncoat stumbled backward, he fumbled to aim his blaster. Adar fired again, careful to keep from hitting the turncoat's weapon. The shot took the man in the shoulder as he keeled over. Adar had not kept count of how many shots he had been able to take with his current weapon, but he was rapidly nearing the point when the blaster was going to stop working. He wanted to have another spare. He examined the fallen turncoat's armor, wondering if that had something to do with making the blaster continue to work. Like all the other Hunwe that Adar had ever seen, the man only had his blaster and his suit of armor. He had no other weapons and wore no bag. The armor might indeed be the answer to why the blasters kept working for them, but not for Adar. If Adar had time, he would try to remove the armor from one of the Hunwe turncoats and wear it himself. Perhaps there would be no end to the number of times that the blaster would fire if the person using it wore the Hunwe armor. The thought made his heart beat quicker. It had to be the armor. The room was silent after the turncoat fell. Adar remained ready for another to appear, but nothing else moved outside the doorway. "Merciful Melia," muttered the short, fat man. Adar turned the blaster towards the man. "Not as merciful as you might think." The man paled and lowered his knife. His face was unshaven by at least a couple of days, and the remnants of his last meal were caught in his whiskers. He was beginning to bald on top, and what hair he did have hung down around his neck. He was round in the middle, but his arms were wide and muscular, like a blacksmith. Please, please, this was all Tate's idea. He had his eye on Kira for a long, long time. He threatened to hurt me if I didn't go along. See? I really didn't have much of a choice. Tate is... He cleared his throat and avoided looking down at his dying companion, or rather was a big fella, and he wasn't afraid to throw his weight around, if you take my meaning. Half the town is afraid of him, and the other half all work for Isaac anyway. Liar, Kira said, using her bound hands to remove her gag. Adar had been too busy to notice that her hands had been tied with an old rope. The old rag she removed was grimy, and there was fresh blood on it. Kira didn't appear to be bleeding anywhere other than on her leg, so Adar was left to wonder if her mouth was bleeding or if it had already been on the rag when it had been stuffed in. Billy has been after a taste of me since we were children. She moved towards him as if she were going to kick him, but Billy stepped back. Adar was surprised that the two were of similar age. He would have placed Billy at late 30s and her in early 20s. Perhaps it was more of a 10-year difference and she just looked younger than she was. Kira smiled wickedly. Baldy Billy, why don't you drop the knife and then take another try at me? Billy made a face at the name, but didn't argue the point. It clearly wasn't the first time that he had heard it. I wouldn't want to, and you know it. My true love has always been Penna. I never meant you no harm and certainly never wanted a taste of you. He spat as to emphasize his point. Both of you, shut up, Adar said. There's more where this came from. He pointed down at the dead turncoat. Kira snorted with derision, ignoring Adar. Penna only married you because you were the son of a prosperous merchant. She never thought your dad would take so long to die. I've heard the way she talks about you, and to you. It's no wonder why you don't have any children. Billy turned red in the face and took a step towards her. This time Kira was able to land her kick, using both legs again, and she caught him on the chin. He stumbled back to the open window and braced himself with one hand. He shook his fist with the other. You know nothing. Once I tell Isaac he killed Tate, Billy nodded at Adar, who do you think he'll blame? He stared at Kira. Isaac might have had a soft spot for you before, but that's... Quiet, both of you, Adar said through clenched teeth, forcing his voice to a whisper. We're all in danger here. There are at least two more chasing after me. Billy sneered as he straightened up. You're the one that should tread lightly. You have no idea what you have done. Adar frowned at Billy and hesitated. The man's words held no threat to Adar. It didn't matter who this Isaac fellow was or what he could do. Adar wouldn't be in Zekirani long enough to have anything to do with the man. He looked down at where he had dropped his bloody knife on the floor after killing Tate. He had never killed another man with a blaster, other than those who had been wearing Hunway armor, and he was hesitant to start. Billy probably deserved to die, but the heat of the moment had passed. Kira was no longer in any immediate danger. Keeping a watchful eye on Billy, Adar picked up his knife. If the man had been caught by the town guard, he would have been put to death, but was it Adar's responsibility to see that it happened? If Adar had still been a general back in Rarban, he wouldn't have hesitated to enforce the law. Afterward, he would have had the death sentence published along with a list of the crimes. It was important that the punishment be swift and public so that others would learn the lesson. Who would learn it here? Adar wasn't sure if he would regret what he had done to Tate. It had seemed like the right thing to do, but that might have been the effect of having the turncoats right on his heels when he had found these people. The body of the burly man had stopped moving, and a puddle of blood had formed around his head. On the back of the man's neck was a tattoo of a ragged sword plunging through a broken skull. It seemed familiar, but Adar could not remember where he had seen it before. Perhaps it had been worn by other men around Zekirani. Adar cleaned his blade on the bed and held it towards Kira, hilt first. She noticed his intent and scooted towards him, keeping her eyes on Billy, who was moving his eyes back and forth between Adar and her. I trust you enough to free me. Kira put her bare feet on the floor, careful to avoid stepping in blood as she stood. But don't be expecting a kiss. I am no damsel in distress. Fair enough. Adar cut through the rope around her hands and handed her the blade to cut the bonds around her feet. She perked up when she had the blade in hand, and Adar realized that he probably should have offered to do it for her. If she refused to give it back and went after Billy, Adar would feel obligated to stop her from killing him, if only so she didn't have it on her conscience. Come here, Billy. Kira turned to face the man and waved Adar's dagger back and forth through the air. Even though he was still holding his knife by his side, Billy cowered backward until he was in danger of falling out of the window. In the silence that followed, the door down below slammed shut. Had it been left open by the turncoat Adar had killed, or had a new one just entered the building? Adar let out a quiet hiss, drawing both of their attention. Quiet, both of you. Kira made as if to move towards Billy, but Adar grabbed her hand. Save it for a different day. Is there another way? He stopped mid-sentence when Billy leaped out the window and into the rain. Adar was surprised when the man didn't fall. With a final look back at them, Billy disappeared from view. Confound it, Kira cried. He's getting away. Come back here. She ran over to the window and was about to follow when a blast went buzzing by to the side of her. Hadar didn't listen to the rest as he spun and let loose his own blast, taking the turncoat in the chest. The man did not fall, so Hadar put another shot into him, even though he looked pretty much dead. As the turncoat fell and slid down the stairs, Hadar thought better of it and realized he shouldn't have wasted the shot. Melia, he thought. I have to figure out why these confounded weapons quit working. It didn't hurt that he had been cautious and fired the second shot, but there was a finite amount of Hunway he could kill with a single blaster. He needed to be more careful. Kira stared at the dead Hunway turncoat in the room, as if seeing him for the first time. That's a man in there. He's shorter than all the rest, too. What happened to the monsters? I keep telling you to be quiet, Hadar whispered. How many more times do you need to hear it before you'll listen? There are more where he came from. And we'll be dead, too, if they find us. He picked up the blasters from the dead turncoats, slung one over his shoulder, and handed the other to Kira. She looked as though he was trying to get her to take a snake. When she finally grabbed it, he took his dagger back in exchange. It won't fire as long as you don't press these levers. Even though she'd taken it willingly, she held it out at a distance. Hadar pulled his blaster up to his shoulder and showed her the button at the front without pushing it. He put the index finger of his other hand on the trigger in the center of the weapon. Point this at what you want to kill. Push the button and pull the lever. She held it as though she expected it to bite her. Suppressing a sigh, he stepped past her and went out through the window onto the roof. Come. The downpour had increased, and he was fully drenched again within seconds. Kira poked out her head, but did not go onto the roof. From the cloud cover above, he could just make out the sound of a ship. He wondered if more of the turncoats had made it back to the town square and escaped on one of the ships. He hoped not. Those ships would be a treasure trove of blasters and other things. If he was lucky, maybe he would discover the secret to making the ships fly. He didn't dare hope too much for that, but he wanted the opportunity to look around. He needed a feel for what it would be like to get the ship in the air. A thought struck him. If the metal men are 1,000 years old, they might know how to work the ships. A shiver of excitement flowed through him. If he could get close enough to a metal man, he would pose the question. A whole world of new possibilities opened up, and he pushed them all away, not daring to get his hopes up. If the metal men had no idea what to do with the ships, it made sense to do everything he could to deprive the Hunway of their resources, however small of an effect it might have on them. The roof upon which Hadar found himself extended 3 feet from the window and ran the length of the building. 2 feet above him was the lip of the roof for the second story. If it had not been raining, he might have been able to make the jump and pull himself up. The angle of the roof, together with the rainwater, made everything slick. It was a short hop to the roof of the next building over. It was of a similar design and had a tiered rooftop as well. The second floor window was open, and the wind blew through curtains that were spattered with rainwater. He looked closer and saw jagged edges of glass around the window. Hadar moved to make the jump until he realized it was the building he'd run through earlier while being chased by the turncoats. The roof he stood upon overlooked the garden. It was empty, but looked as though a herd of animals had trampled their way through it. None of the squashes that he had seen had survived, and most of the corn plants were flat on the ground. Can we get to another building from here? Hadar asked, crouching down so that he could talk to Kira without having to yell. Other than that one, he pointed to the nearby building. If we go back in, can we escape on the other side? Kira shook her head. No, the building is too far away. Not unless you want to just drop to the ground. Hadar growled quietly, wondering what the best option would be. Before he could think them all through, the sound of blast came through the open window that Billy had broken to facilitate his escape. Well, that answered that question. He would not risk dropping if the last turncoat was that close. The last one that I know of, Hadar thought. It was better to assume that more had joined the group of three he had been running from. That would probably be Billy, Hadar said, climbing back through the window and crossing the room. Kira followed him after a moment of indecision and a mistrustful glance his way. Come with me or go somewhere else. It makes no difference to me. To be honest, staying here to hide is about as safe as any other decision you might make. Kira did not respond as she followed him down the stairs. The dead turncoat had slid all the way to the bottom while Hadar had been outside. Hadar was forced to jump down the last 4 stairs. He landed, narrowly avoiding the turncoat's helmet. He turned to offer a hand to Kira, but she smirked and leaped over the body, landing lightly on her bare feet. The door that Hadar had used to enter the building hung open, tossed back and forth by the wind. The floor just inside was slick with water and mud. He considered setting up the ambush he'd thought of earlier, but decided he'd prefer to check out the rest of the building to make sure there wasn't another turncoat lurking in a dark corner. "Stay here," Adar said, before moving towards the open door and checking the rooms he had passed by earlier. The doors to each were ajar. He ducked his head in without disturbing the doors. Empty bedrooms. One was made up and tidy, the other looked used. He returned to Kira, and she followed him further down the hallway. When they passed a door that led to a kitchen, Adar moved inside and looked around while Kira waited for him in the hall. Other than a big pot of soup that sat boiling over on a stove, nothing else moved. Half of an onion lay chopped into pieces on a wooden cutting board, while the other half lay untouched on the counter. The smell of the soup made Adar's stomach growl, but he did not pay it any attention as he headed back into the hall. A little ways down from the kitchen, they came to a large common room. Most of the tables and benches had been flipped over. One of the tables had been broken in half. Shattered dishes and bottles littered a floor that was wet with beer and wine. A wheel of fractured cheese lay broken nearby. When Kira saw the mess, she swore under her breath. Adar was about to ask her if she worked here when he saw a full-size Hunway standing in an open door to the far side of the room. The wind bounced the door off the Hunway, but it did not move. Adar brought up his blaster, prepared to fire, but he hesitated. The Hunway still had not moved, even though he was facing them. The light from the outside cast the large monster into shadow, and his armor was thick with rain. Adar took a couple of steps forward. When the Hunway still had not done anything, he approached until he could see the burned skeletal remains of the Hunway inside the armor. The floor around the Hunway was wet, and it looked like the doorway had caught fire. The doorframe had turned black where the Hunway's shoulder was braced against it. Adar studied the puddles that had formed on the floor around the Hunway. This wasn't just the rain. The whole area had been soaked by hand. He was impressed that the person who had put out the fire had enough grit about them to do so, even though a smarter person would have just fled. Adar assumed it was the innkeeper. It might have even been Kira. "You know the innkeep?" He stopped short when he realized that he was alone. Kira had disappeared. He could not blame her for going. The last remaining turncoat was hunting Adar, not her. And if he had been in her position, he would have done the same thing. He moved closer to the Hunway and reached out a hand. After pausing just above the armor and feeling no heat, he put his hand on it. It was cool to the touch. A moment of indecision swept over him. He wanted to push the Hunway over to see what would happen when it hit the ground. The fire that killed them had been intense. Had the armor maintained its integrity? He lowered his hand. Maybe if he had time, after taking care of the last turncoat. With the woman out of the picture, and two of the three turncoats already dead, the chances of him going head-to-head with the last Hunway turncoat and surviving had gotten better. Assuming, of course, that there weren't any other turncoats about. He thought of the blast he'd heard coming from the next house over and retraced his steps back to the hallway. When he peeked out his head, the door at the end was still flapping in the wind and the rain. He was done running from Hunway. Or from turncoats. Or anything else that this crazy new world was going to throw at him. The door stopped moving, and the turncoat stepped in with his blaster ready. Adar ducked back into the common room. The hallway was silent, and Adar couldn't decide if the turncoat had seen him. The longer the quiet stretched out, the more certain he became that the turncoat knew he was here. Adar had just taken several steps back, angling for a position of cover, when something rolled down the hallway floor and came to a stop just outside the doorway of the common room. It emitted a hissing sound. Adar backed away, chiding himself for his thought just moments before about not running away anymore. Sometimes running was the only thing to do. He had a bad feeling about this. As the hissing got louder, he moved faster. He did not hesitate any longer to knock over the dead Hunway at the door. He barely even paused to watch as the corpse hit the ground. From what he saw, the armor wasn't damaged by the fall, but he didn't stick around long enough to find out for sure. By that time, the hissing had become a high-pitched whine. Adar had not heard the sound before in all of his dealings with the Hunway, but he could not shake the feeling that it was a bomb. He was in a flat outrun when a blast flew by him. Without a second thought, he dove and rolled, losing both of his spare blasters in the process. Another blast came within inches of him as it tore through the cobblestone road, spurring him back to his feet. He hopped over the fence of the large home where he had first spotted the Hunway turncoats. He flubbed the landing and almost twisted an ankle when his foot caught on one of the turncoats he had killed earlier. He fell in a heap and rolled close to the body for cover. The long groove that had been made by the blast down the back of the turncoat's armor was a testament to the fact that the armor would not protect Adar. But there was not much else for cover. He would have moved, but it was either this or a rosebush that was several feet back. He wiped the rain out of his face with one hand as he brought up his blaster with the other. All was quiet, but he could see the turncoat approaching through a hole in the fence that had been made by a blast. Adar recognized it as having been made by a shot that he had taken. Lightning flashed in the sky above, and it was followed a few seconds later by rolling thunder. He aimed his blaster through the hole, but he could no longer see the approaching Hunway. Bloody Melia's nine burning hells, Adar muttered as he shifted, trying to gain a new vantage point. It did not help. He moved again, careful to keep from doing anything that would make any sound. His head was sopping wet. When he shifted, rainwater slid into his eyes. He blinked it away and continued to slide to the side. When he finally saw the Hunway turncoat, a stab of panic filled him. Adar looked up from the hole and above the fence. The turncoat was scanning the garden. Adar did not breathe as he raised his blaster and pulled the trigger. Nothing happened. But the trigger made a quiet clicking sound that drew the turncoat's attention. Adar sprung up and vaulted over the fence, pushing the turncoat's blaster away as he fired. A small flash of light that was similar to lightning traveled from the arm of the turncoat to the blaster. With his other hand, Adar pulled out the oakwee dagger and plunged it into the neck of the turncoat. He hooked his foot behind the man's boot and pushed him over, snatching away his blaster as he fell. The man had not even landed before Adar put a blast through the man's chest. Lightning cut through the sky again, highlighting the eyes of a much older man as his life ebbed away. Surprised, Adar reached down and pulled off the man's helmet, confirming that the man was in his 50s. Adar wondered if he had been the leader of the group. He could not be certain, but he believed that all the other turncoats he had killed had been young men. Why? Adar asked himself. A look of surprise crossed the man's face. He opened his mouth and spoke. Whatever it was he said, Adar could not understand. Once he was dead, Adar picked up the blasters that he had lost earlier and headed in the direction of the arches at a run, traversing the alleys and the backways of the city without pause. He slowed before he made it more than a couple of blocks. He gripped the blaster in his hands as he tried to beat back the fear that was pushing him forward. He had lost time in fighting the turncoats. Enough time had passed that if Tear had been planning to ambush him, he would have had ample opportunity to set up a trap or two as well. Adar came to a stop, and after seeing that he was alone, closed his eyes while taking several deep breaths. There might be other Hunway turncoats, or even Hunway close by, but he might not be as lucky as he had been last time if he faced Tear again while his blood was still hot. The fight with the turncoats had only served to stoke the flames. His face felt flushed from anger and the physical exertion of running. The rain had lessened somewhat, and he was soaked through. He had no idea how long it had been since his fight with Tear in the archives. Time had lost all meaning. The sun was behind the dark gray clouds and of no help. Tear had revealed what he had done, hoping to take advantage of Adar's anger. It had almost worked, but now that the truth was out, there could be no hiding from what Tear had confessed. Adar tried to put himself in Tear's shoes and was unable to make sense of things. Tear had been despondent and withdrawn for much of the trip from Neberon to Zekerani. Adar had assumed that Tear had felt that way because of the situation with the Hunway and his personal animosity towards Adar. What if there was something more to it? What if the guilt had been eating at Tear all these years? Would it be enough to make him think twice about killing Karn? There had been a time when Adar would have depended on Tear for almost anything. When Adar was honest with himself, he had been hopeful that things might be repaired. Tear had been a good man. Adar pushed his questions to the side as he ran. He would act as if Tear had killed Karn and was planning an ambush until he knew differently. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.